bowed the knee to weariness.
My last week at a business seminar.
Oh, yeah.
It really turned out to be really something exceptional happening again.
Is that right? Yeah, you're telling me about the seminars and things.
Yeah, it was good. It was a challenge to work with us.
Good.
You were there for that night.
Mm. Last night?
And, it was really, I don't know how much it was part of the CAD, but he was basically challenging. He's been in business to step forward.
Good. Probably hear testimonies about it now.
Yeah.
I hope. Praise the Lord. Yeah, Christian business influence. Boy, that's good to hear. Mm-hmm.
Especially the concept about, man, here's my business.
Yeah, right. Good. Good. Amen. God's doing a lot of good things among us. Okay. Well, we left off in Deuteronomy 6. I think we got through verse 1. So we're up to verse 2. I think John.
We were doing verse
3? Oh, good. Was it verse 2?
Yeah.
You just read verse 2. That's right. And then you got saved by the bell or something? Okay, that's what it was. And yeah, and you'd read it in English, that's right, and there were some things I was going to say. Okay, that's why I put my marker in front of verse 2. Okay, well, in verse 2, I'll just run through it. I don't remember now what he said yesterday, so we'll just forget that.
Come on.
Yeah. It's under the blood. So we'll just read it down here. Verse 2, it should be, in order that you might fear Yahweh, your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandment, singular there, which I am commanding you, and that's a PO participle for command, which I am commanding you, so it's a participle form, which I am commanding you, you and your son, and the son of your son, all the days of your life, and in order that your days may be long, or will be long. Okay, Eric? In order that you will or in order that you might. I had them both down there. Depends on whether you want to go to a modal type of translation or not. So in order that you will fear Yahweh or in order that you might fear Yahweh, your God, to keep all his statutes and his commandment, which I am commanding you, you and your son and the son of your son, all the days of your life, in order that your days will be long or might be long.
Or lengthened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or lengthened.
Mm-hmm.
With
that paragogic
chaos. Yeah. Paragogic noun.
Is that Hifil form for lengthened?
Yes, that's a Hifil from. Was that verb in this exercise?
No, it's back a couple.
Back a few, yeah, okay. It's an imperfect Hifil.
Isn't it commandment for in a plural language?
Let me check it here.
Comment?
Oh. Well, let me check here. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong word. Okay, mitzvot. Okay, mitzvot is commandment. Let's see. Commandments. I'll say mitzvot vow. Okay, you're right. Now, I don't know why. Oh, yeah, I do have commandments. I just can't read my writing. Tailed off at the end there. I couldn't see it. Yeah, I guess that was it was commandment singular in the previous verse, and now it's plural. Okay, that's what happened. Yeah, that's correct. Commandment plural. Okay, any other question? Okay, verse 3. You were last for price, right? Okay, so Doug, why don't you take verse 3?
Yeah.
Peter gets the Shema.
We started out.
Udabash. Okay, this is a little tricky. Yeah, especially this first verb here.
Perfect.
It is a regular perfect in form. Yeah, well, it's hard to know whether it's converted or not, but how do I do this? What's actually happening here is the context is showing a command. So it is a continued series starting with an imperative. It's not really there, but it's understood by the whole context of the command. Yeah. We've already seen, I think, you know, there has been some notes on the chapters where if the context will set up a certain thing, then you might go ahead and continue with a series. Otherwise, see, you've got, oh, Israel here. I mean, you've got, it wouldn't make any sense any other way. So, translate it, hear, O Israel.
Yeah, I just said, you shall hear.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you went to a imperfect. That's not too bad. You shall hear, O Israel.
That sounds imperative for
you. Yeah, you might do it that way, or just take it. See, there is a series where you start with an imperative and continue with converted perfects. And so I would consider the previous imperative, and I don't think it's that big of an issue either way, though.
Where is the dark?
Well, it's not a real...
dark night here,
yes, it's kind of starting here, but the context of the previous two verses has been introducing you to the commandments he's going to give. This is the commandment here, verse 1. I think it really goes back to this is the commandment, and then verse 3. And see, that this is the commandment is not an imperative form either, but it's the context of he's laying a commandment down. So the fact that he's making a context of what he's about to say is a commandment, then he starts with a series, you know, I mean, it's almost as though he's started a series in mentally anyway, and so he's picking up with it. This would be a nonverbal, you know, well, I guess you can't really call it nonverbal. There are verbs involved, but consider the whole context as your nonverbal starter for your series or something.
Right, something like that was involved because unconverted
form. Yes. Yeah, there should be a tip-off there that something's... And then when you hear Yisrael, you know, right afterwards, and you've got a second-person form here, a second-person perfect form, and then Israel afterwards, it doesn't fit any other way. Okay? I can understand why. All right, so hear, O Israel.
And, okay, based on all that, and that may go well with you, that you may be increased, as Yahweh, the God of your father, spoke to you concerning a land born in your.
Okay. This next, yeah, it's pretty good. The La'asot Asher Yitav. The Asher there, you may have to translate something like, "Hear, O Israel, and give diligence to do that which will be well with you, and that by which you may increase greatly."
Yeah.
Yeah, the both Ashers are used as compound relatives, that which and that by which. So just because of the note. You know, so the translation would be, "Hear, O Israel, and give diligence to do that which will be well with you, and that by which you may increase greatly, just as Yahweh, the God of your fathers, spoke to you." You know, just as coming from Ka'asher, in like manner as, or such as, or just as, or something. Yahweh, you, the God of your fathers, spoke to you, a land flowing with milk and honey.
Okay, so how does that...
Okay, well, let's look at it in Hebrew here. The first, you've got "Hear, O Israel," that first phrase, and then your another command, and Shemarta would be, and give diligence, you know, keep, so forth. Give diligence to do, la'asot, to do, and then to do which, you see, the asher is which, and it's almost acting as a substantive. You're doing something. And so they're giving it that which. That's what their footnote is all about. So to do that which will be well with you. And the which is the subject of the yitav, will be well to you, with you. So do that which will be well with you, and which, that by which is coming just from the meaning of the verb, that by which you may increase greatly. See? So that by which you may increase ma'od greatly. I've got a note written in my book here and I can't read it too well. There's a paragogic nun on the end of that.
Yeah.
This tirbun, it's got a defective form. You've got, instead of shurek, you've got a kibbutz and you've got a paragogic nun. So it's from Rabbah, and it's the imperfect form to increase, but it's unusual. I'm surprised he didn't put a footnote on that.
No, I looked at that word in my text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it doesn't? Does it have a shurek?
Sure.
Okay. Which text was it? Was it Snaith or was it Green? Oh. Oh, yeah. Okay. They may have changed it. And, you know, remove some of the defectives or something out of it so that it would be easier for modern Hebrew or something. I don't know. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, it helped you. Yeah, all right.
And letting go always helps in these situations.
Right, it does. Okay, was there another question? Mm-hmm. Eric.
For the second
Asher,
by which.
Yeah, they put a by in parentheses there, and in their translation, because there's no by actually in the text, but it's just because of the meaning of the verb. See, because if you just say that which you may increase greatly, that which you may increase greatly doesn't make any sense really. It's got to be that with reference to which you increase greatly, or that by which you increase greatly, and showing a means or something like that.
Snake's got the. Sure.
Oh, he does?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I have to check Bibliobreca or something. That's probably what the Masoretic text had. I don't know if he... It must either be a variation in this, on this one, or he just made an error here, or just threw this in just to try you or something. Yeah, but I'm surprised he would do this without putting a note. Yeah. That was mean. Okay. So that by which you may increase greatly, just as Yahweh, God of your fathers, spoke to you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Any questions on any of those last parts? Okay. Well, that brings us to something familiar. Verse 4. Peter. Yeah.
Shema Yisrael, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad.
Okay, good.
Hear, O Israel. Yahweh, I got these little predications.
They are.
Yahweh is our God. Yahweh is a united one.
Oh, boy. Excommunicate that man. Yeah, right. He couldn't resist. Okay, but this is a good... Yeah, Brumbach's analytical, yeah. Well, several things here, though. Do notice that these are predications. Yahweh is our God. Yahweh is one. And if you ever hear the Shema spoken by a Jew, you'll hear it just like that, except they won't say Yahweh. They'll say Adonai. So you hear Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. You'll hear that, you know, I just, you know, try to put in mind, and you'll pick it up, you know, when you hear Jews or something, if you're in a Jewish part of the city or something like that, walk by a synagogue and you hear, you know, I've heard it from time to time. I can't always, you know, put my finger on where I've heard it. But, I've never heard it in the Shema. I've heard Hashem. I've never heard it in the Shema. They always.
Would it be for the dead grandson that they use Hashem?
Yeah. They will talk about Hashem, and if they're talking about it rather than using it in the text, you know, they may use that.
They do say Yahweh.
Huh?
Elias said they do say Yahweh. It's not.
Some of them do say that now. Yeah, they probably loosened up. It depends on how orthodox they are too. In the nation of Israel, you can probably see a lot more liberalism, you know, among them. And but if you're in a real Orthodox synagogue, you know, Nora Fischler told me that when they were kids in their Hebrew school, you know, and learning Hebrew, they'd try to read it, you know, and the teacher would always knock them on the head or something, you know, and tell them, you know, you don't say that. You know, they were real meticulous about it. When I took Hebrew at the U, the professor I had was a Jew. I don't think he was really very Orthodox either, but he wouldn't pronounce it either. He told us not to pronounce it and so forth. So, you know, say Adonai. So I think there's quite a bit of variation.
Did he cover it by saying, we don't really know how to pronounce it?
No, he knew how to pronounce it. Well, I don't know if he actually pronounced it or not. I don't think he did. But he just said, something. This is pronounced Adonai. You know, and he said something to the effect that they don't pronounce the name or something. You know. So that's the way you'll hear it. Okay, but it is predication, and the way the King James I've heard it so much in Hebrew, I don't even remember how King James says it.
Lord our God is one Lord.
There's one Lord, yeah, something like that, and that's just, that's weak. Yeah.
Good. Is pronunciation of that name that will be Shwa and the gold then, or the ball?
Probably Pathak in the first and Segol in the second. Shawah you'll see on the Yahawah, you know, when they put the vowel points of Adonai on, because you know, the Adonai has a chatef pathak in the first syllable, and that would become a Shawah if you put it on a yod. So that's what you'll see. You'll see Yahawah, you know, as it were, if you try to pronounce it. But now, the reasoning behind having Pathak and Segol there is generally looking at it an older form of an imperfect verb form. And then there's other considerations too. Other nations in the time had languages other you know, that interacted with Israel, where they would talk about Israel as God and use the name and put it in their letters. And they some of them had vowels. And so that's why they figure, you know, it's mainly from archaeological, you know, references of other peoples who tried to pronounce the name, that they've got information that that's what it was. But it, admittedly, it's, you know, not absolute certainty. Okay, and of course when you're dealing with a name, it may not just be a pure verb form either. You know, you may get some changes in vowel points as a result of it just being a name. All right, verse 5. John.
Wahavta, et Yahweh, Elohika, Bekol, Levavka, Ubekol, Nafeshka, Nafshika.
Yeah, Nafshika.
Nafshika. Ubekol, Mioneka.
Okay. And take this first verb just like the first verb in verse 3 was. Is that?
You will love.
Yeah.
Or love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You will love or just love. Yeah. You
love Yahweh your God in all your heart, mm-hmm. in all your soul, in all your much.
Yeah, in all your much.
Okay. That's really, you know, in all your
it's quite much. Graphic, yeah. Yeah, I like it, you know, and you know the way my oath is used throughout, and then you see this with a suffix on it, it sure gives you a feeling. Yeah. Okay. You could translate it in all or with all. Most of them translate with because of its in instrumental type of sense. But in the realm of, you know, I think Hebrew is very much like Greek in this respect. It's more about this picture of a location or within the realm of something. Okay, good. So when you shall love Yahweh, or love Yahweh, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, all of your strength. Verse 6, Tony, you want to feel brave today?
Brave?
Wahayu? No, yeah, verse 6, Wahayu. Wahayu. Wahayu.
Hadabrim. Ha'ela. Asher. Anoki. Mezueka. Hayom. Al. Lavaka.
Okay. Yeah, that's Mitzalaka there, that phoneme one there. Mitzalaka. Okay. Translation?
Well, I wrote it down. And I put it down. And it was these words which I commanded you the day or that day on your heart.
Okay. The hayu kind of goes with it's the verb for the subject words, and you may want to put the phrase which I'm commanding you will. In other words, what I put is, and these words which I am commanding you today shall be upon your heart, will be upon your heart. So literally, will be upon your heart these words which I am commanding you today. Will be these words which I'm commanding you today upon your heart.
That whole thing is subject then, basically, or subject.
Yeah, really, the whole phrase from Hadivarim to Hayom is the subject of the verb Hayu, and then the predicate, the predicate would be all Livavaka, and that would be your, you know, upon your heart. That's the other side of the predication.
Yeah.
So the word order is a little bit unusual, but.
But the next days will be.
Yes, that's fine. That's fine. Let these be upon. Yeah, let these words be upon your heart. I think that's even better. It's just again, it's that converted perfect, and so you've almost got the sense of it. You know, let this be, or this shall be. These words shall be. Now may this be.
The participle commanding you.
No, it's just a perfect, the verb form? Verb form, you mean commanding.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, which I am commanding you. That's a participle with a suffix. Yeah. It's got a, you see, they give you the breakdown here. It's mitzawe osaka. So just the participle, but then plus an object suffix that you haven't seen yet. I'm not sure if it's a PL participle, probably. Well, that was part of the original word. But that is a sigil there. I think it's a PL participle. It's got the first two consonants, first two vowel points are right. And it's a three hey, yeah, that's probably what it is. It's a three hey PL participle. Okay. Well, let's see, what we need is a three hey, okay. Yeah, it's the pattern for a three hey, page 200. We'll give it to you. They give you in na. And mitzvah, then, assuming that the root form is mitzvah, this would be the proper form for a PL participle. Because it's a three hey, that's why the sigol is there. The pattern is shawah pasach sigol for a three hey. Let's see, what do they give you for command? And, yeah.
They give three different forms for it, too.
Do they? Variations of spelling and so forth?
One of them is that form with the Dagesh Lini and the cross at the end. The other one has
Much learning has made us mad. Okay, well, that's what it is, VL participle with a object suffix. And that's what happened to the Segol. It went to Shawa because of the object suffix. If you look down at footnote 2, that'll give you the full form of the participle, what it was before, and then it's equivalent to Mitzaweh and Otaka. Okay, verse 7, who's next? Tony was last. Eric. Nah, it's on the paper. Okay. This probably is probably Bishok Vaka there, because when you double Shua there, the first one's silent. So that would make that probably Kamatz Chatuf. Okay. I think I misled you in that first one, too. That Shua is silent. It should be Wishinan Tam, because you've got the Pathak there, and you're going to close the syllable with that Shua, and then start another one with the Bagai Kafat, the Dagesh. So, Wishinan Tam. Wishinan Tam. Okay, translation.
And you shall teach them to your son and speak in them. Speak.
Yeah, it's literally speak in them. It's just that apparently that verb takes base with its object, so you might say she'll speak them, speak of them, or speak.
Speak them.
In the realm of them, you know, that's kind of the idea.
Speak them in your sadness. And your heart, in the way, in your laying down and in your rising.
Okay, the Sabbath part. I think that's just the verb to sit, and probably better translated. And you shall speak them when you sit in your house, in your sitting in your house, in your house sitting. Okay. So. You shall speak of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk in the way, and when you lie down, and when you arise, or in your lying down, and in your risings, that'd be fine.
And
you walk in the way, and your walking's in the way, or whatever. But Derek,
you tell all the infinitive constructs.
Yeah, they're all infinitive constructs with suffixes, and most of them have the bait. Yeah, they've got the bait prefix on them. So you got the preposition, and that's what that lechet there. See, uvelechtecha is from halach.
I got confused.
Yeah, that's a real easy one to get confused on. Believe me. Remember that the lechet is the infinitive construct, because it's a one hey, but it acts like a one yod, and they lose the one the yod, and then it's a three hey. No, it's not really a three hey, but it gets those get the shortened infinitive construct segalit pattern again. So that's an easy one to miss. Okay, any other questions on that? Verse 8, the price.
Mm-hmm.
But are you?
Mm-hmm. What? So, both Bain and Neka.
Okay.
Find them. This is hard to translate. I either put down find them as a sign or bind them to symbolize on your hand, and they will be bands between your eyes.
Right, okay, something like that. These words are a little bit hard to translate. He gives you a note here. Yeah, you should bind them. You should bind them for a sign, probably. You should bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they will be for bands or frontlet bands or whatever they give for that. Yeah. Let's see, what do I have here? Bind them on your hand. I have hand singular. Yeah, it's singular. Well, that the eka, no, I think this is one of those where it's in pause or something, because you got the stress retracted. This can be confusing. But notice what the stress is. You got deka, and that's an indication that the schwa has gone to.
There's a saluk in the text.
Is there? Okay.
Or
an off knock.
The one that goes up like this point.
Yeah. Okay, that's an off knock, yeah.
All right.
Okay, that's the reason. You have to watch those. Those are tricky. Because it does look like the plural suffix with the sagol there. Although you'd have a yolov in it if you had a plural suffix, though.
So.
Yeah, there'd be a yolov there.
Okay, the
word for which?
The frontlets.
Frontlets, yes. Yeah, that's what it looks like. There'll be four frontlet bands, yeah. No, for frontlet bands between, they will be, they is the subject, and it's understood, and they will be four frontlet bands. That wouldn't really be a direct object or even a predicate nominative. It would be a prepositional phrase. They will be four frontlets between your eyes, and then between your eyes, another prepositional phrase. Let them become, that's a possibility too, I think. And they will be, and they will become frontlet bands between your eyes.
Let them become.
That might work there too. Yeah, because there is that idiom with Hayaplus, the preposition lamas. I think that could be, and it doesn't mean a whole lot different either. They will be for frontlet bands, or they will become for, you know, you're talking about. You're not really talking about these things becoming something, but they're going to become something to you. You know, and with reference to you. So yeah, I think that would be all right. I would accept that as a translation. Okay. I'm wondering what this comes from, this root. Did you check it?
Okay.
So that's the verb is from.
That's probably a hollow.
Yeah, most likely a hollow verb.
Yeah.
It's interesting, we have two tastes in a row here.
To spin.
Both.
To spin in the masculine, as in yarn.
To spin. Interesting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So a band or something that's probably coming off the spinning wheel? Or? Well, that I think he was looking up the root verb from which the noun came.
Yeah,
the noun.
It's an effective form, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's that first colon is a whole. Wow.
That's supposed to be one, too? Yeah, and the last one, the oath there, too, I would expect that to be defective in this one, too. Because your normal feminine ending is
fine. Yeah, it doesn't show that.
Doesn't?
No.
Okay. You may just be assuming you recognize that one. Okay, interesting. Verse 9, then. Doug, you next? Got a short one. Yeah, Mrs. Both. Mm-hmm. Bish Areka. Okay.
And you shall write down on the doorpost of your house.
in your gates, yeah. You shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and in your gates. Okay? Good. Any questions here? Any of these verses? All right. Why don't I assign the lesson 47 exercises first before we get into this? This will go fairly fast, too. So we can get started on those next week. 47, section A, do number 1, 5, and 9. 1, 5, and 9 in section A. That's page 234. 1, 5, and 9. You don't need to worry about part B there, which is negate those. At least we won't take time in class to do it. Part C, translate, do number 3 and number 9. Number 3 and number 9. And part E, translate, do number 1 and number 10, which is a good one.
I'll pass on that one.
Right. Whoever gets that one. I can just see you jockeying for position that day to sitting. Okay, number 1, number 10. And then part G. Part G is do all of that. That's the continuation of our reading. We'll get some in Joshua there.
Oh,
so.
Everybody shows up, I get 10.
Yeah.
We could split it up.
I'll just do number 1 and number 10, and that's it. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, if everybody shows up, and if...
And I don't think
you're
seeing.
Yeah, you're going to be shocking. Hey, you're in heaven.
Okay, part G, you do all of that. So that'll prepare you for lesson 47. Okay, lesson 47 then, say page 169, page 231. Hollow verbs in the hifil. The call distinction between roots 2 wow, like yakum, and roots 2 yov, like yasim, is not maintained in the hifil verbs derived from these same roots. The forms given for hekim, the root of kam, are standard. So this distinction between the where the yod appears or the wow appears as a shirik does not hold for the hifil. And the hifil are all going to look alike. So that can be considered nice or not nice, depending on how you look at it. It might be nice in terms of memorizing the forms, but it may be harder for recognition of forms, you know, to identify this one with a particular verb. So your root type here, hollow, two wow, or yod verb, the example they're giving is from kam, and it's hekim, the perfect, imperfect, yakim, jussive, yakim, imperative, hakim, infinitive construct, hakim, participle, mekim. And if it also happens to be a three guttural, which is kind of hard in a way because you've only got two consonants in the stem, and how can one of them be a three? But the philosophy is that the missing one was two. Number two is a hollow, you know, it's hollow. So they're still going to label it according, they're still going to call it a three guttural, even though the root would be nach, just two letters here for this one. So if it's a three guttural, assuming that the second position was this hollow one, it'd be henik, heniach, excuse me, yaniach, jussive, yanach, imperative, hanach, the infinitive construct, haniach, and the participle, meniach. Okay, then the three aleph, if it's three aleph, again, assuming that last position is a third position, really, on a hollow verb, this one's not too bad, it's just the quiescent aleph. So it's hey ni, ya, excuse me, hey vi, na vi, ya, excuse me, ya vi, jussive, ya ve, imperative, ha ve, infinitive construct ha vi, and participle, me vi. Now here's something interesting. Note that the participle has the same preformative vowel as the perfect. Now looking at the participle over here, we got mekim for this first one, and the perfect had hekim, theri in the first syllable. And so it's a little bit unusual. None of the other hifils we've had so far had the same vowel in the perfect as they had in the participle. Now, do you remember what the most common pattern was there? What was the most common pattern in the perfect for the first vowel in a hifil? Yeah, hirik. And what about the participle? Most of them have pathak, I think. Yeah, most of them have pathak. Yeah, mashmi and so forth. Yeah, I think. The PL gets Shua.
Yeah.
Okay, so in other words, they were different. Hirik and Pathak, and here they're the same, but they're both Seri. So that's unusual. So this stands in contrast to all our other Hifil verbs studied at this point. Then the presence of a guttural other than Aleph in the final root position has the same effect as it has in Hashmiya. In other words, you get this Pathak furtive, and it's very similar to what you saw before, so there doesn't need to be any more comment on it. And then for Havi, compare Hamzi, that's the Hifil of Matzah, and I think that was the one they gave you an example for the three Aleph. So it happens the same. You know, in other words, it's just nothing new here as far as those are concerned. Now, in the inflection of the perfect, there are two distinct paradigms, one with the linking vowel colon vowel and one without. So you see two complete sets of paradigms for the perfect of the hollow verbs. One of them's got, and this colon vowel comes in near the end, just before the ending. So you see the Roman numeral 1 and 2 there, the two sets of paradigms for the same verb. This is the verb kam now in the Hifil. And we've got hekim and hekima. And then here's where the change comes. Hakimotha is the form for in paradigm 1. If you look across to paradigm 2 in the same position, it's hekamta. And you don't have that kolom wow, and you have a different vocalic pattern. And then you get Hakimoth, and that would be Hekampt, and Hakimothi, and Hekampti. So that's where the differences lie. And then, of course, in the plurals, that the third person forms are the same. So if you just think of it that way, the third person forms turn out to be the same for both these paradigms. But it's in the second person and first person forms where the differences lie. Yes?
Except for the yellow.
Which one now?
No, I was talking about that.
Okay. Yeah, this, you know, it's the, in the first column, it's the first two forms. Those are your singulars, and then the next column is that first form. Those are the third person forms. Singular. It would be nice if they put that down just to keep track of them. But it's in the second person and first person form, singular and plural, where that kolom wa appears and the changes are, and the things are different. In the plurals, in the second person forms, you got hakimothem and hakimothen in that first paradigm. In the second paradigm, it's hakimtem and hakimten. And then, of course, in the first person plural, hakimoth. Yeah, Hakimonu, and then Hakamnu for the other one. Okay, now as far as paradigm one is by far the more frequent, is what he says. So this first one with this kolom wow, the one that's more difficult, that's the one that's more frequent.
Of course.
Naturally. Okay. Then the very common verb, hevi, to bring, from the root ba, or bo, I guess, it was a two. Wow, in the root, is usually inflected according to paradigm 2. So this one that's very common, you know, first he gets in saying that paradigm 1 is by far the most frequent, but this one particular verb that's used for, you know, probably one of the most frequent verbs used, that one follows paradigm 2. Yes? To come or enter, and so that to make it hifil would be to bring, cause to come, cause somebody to come or cause somebody to go. Mm-hmm. Okay, the imperfect and the remaining forms follow a single inflectional pattern. Note the retraction of stress and the vowel replacement of the converted imperfect. That's pretty straightforward. We're used to seeing that. So in the imperfect, you only have one paradigm to worry about. And so yakim, takim, takim, takimi, akim, yakimu, tikimena, takimu, tikimena. And that's funny words, I think. And Nakim. Okay? So, Tekimena. If your wife ever hears you practicing these paradigms, she's going to wonder, what in the world am I teaching you? Okay, then the justive forms, there's the Yakim, but then Wayakim is pretty typical. You get the shortening of the Seri to Segol and the retraction stress. So that's your converted form, derived from the justice. Imperative, hakim, and hakimi, hakimu, etc. Okay, question?
Mm-hmm. them indeed have taken well with taking Yod, that's a shorter form than the Joseph.
Oh, yes. What are you saying, that the three hay was not shorter and this one is, you mean?
Yeah, I was interested in that. This one got shorter.
Yes.
They go all together, while the three hay, I believe, were not shorter.
No, I don't think they were. Some of the three hays are pretty odd. Some of them, there's some of them even lengthen, you know, one of the vowels. But let's see here. Yeah, that's just got the seglet pattern. Yevin, so forth. The reason that they're shorter, I see what you're thinking. The three hays are shorter in that the hay drops off, but they still get another syllable in there. I mean, they because the hay drops off, they put another vowel in there to make. For example, yarbeh, you drop the e off and you get yarb, but then you put another sigol in between the R and the B sound there, yara.
Yeah.
So it ends up having the same number of syllables, but they're just different ones. Okay, the infinitive construct, hakim, and then with suffixes on it is hakimi, hakimaka, etc. And the first syllable will shorten down to, in this case, it's going to be a chata fatak because the hay can't take shua. And then infinitive absolute, hakim, participle, makim, mikimim, and kimoth. Okay. Mikimoth, yeah. Mikimoth Club. I don't know. I think we've been going at this a little bit too long. And we're all starting to.
Comic relief.
Yeah, a little bit of comic relief. It does help once in a while. Okay, section 170. Idiomatic use of halak. Now, halak has been strange every way you look at it, and the forms and everything else, so it's not too surprising to see some of this idiom. We've already encountered a little bit of this idiom in a previous example. In the example, Wayelev halok ochal, and he walked along eating. Remember, one of the chapters we covered, I think it was when we talked infinitive absolutes and how that sometimes they put two infinitive absolutes together and so forth. Well, this was one of the examples given back there. The infinitive absolute halok is used in accordance with the construction study in section 129 and may be taken as modifying or supplementing the main verb of the clause with which it is cognate. But in here's now we're going to take it a step further with halak. In this example B, we've got wayashuvu hamayim halok washuv or washov. And the waters receded gradually. This is from Genesis 8:3, talking about after the flood. The idiomatic use of halok is clear, since a literal translation is impossible. What would a literal translation of this be?
And the waters returned, walking and returning.
Yes, and the waters returned, walking and returning. So you don't normally talk about waters walking, you know. So that's why he said a literal translation is impossible. He may have a point here. Yeah, but if you take it going and returning, since they're not walking, going and returning, that's not too bad. In fact, that's really what the idiomatic idea is. The waters return, going and returning. In other words, the idea of going is showing progress. It was progressive. It was going. And so this is a way of expressing a progressive change, gradual change. So that's why they translate the waters receded gradually. In other words, the waters were returning, going and returning. It was a process of returning like that. It's a progressive action. So that's the idiom. More explicitly, if the first of two infinitives absolute in the construction instance above is halok, there is a nuance of continuous or gradual action. Okay, closer related to this is a parallel use of the participle, holek. The basic idiom is subject plus holek plus a second participle or an adjective. So this is analogous somewhat to the situation with the infinitive absolute, but it's a little bit different, at least in form. So example here, C, hamayim holek with so'er. Here you have two participles, and the first one's holek. So you have a subject, hayam, and you've got holek as the participle, next participle, plus the second participle. So the sea was growing more and more tempestuous. This is the way it's translated. the subject is the sea, and Holek, if you take this, the sea was going and becoming tempestuous. So the idea is a progressive growing in the area of tempestuousness. So they translate the sea was growing more and more tempestuous, or it was becoming more and more tempestuous, and was gradually becoming something like that. But it gives you this whole lake kind of takes you right down and lets you watch the action proceed. You know, it's just kind of moving right along like that. The example Dawid Holek Wagadol. David was growing more and more important. Okay, here again we have the participle, and then gadol could be considered an adjective here probably. And so David was going and being great, you know, he was progressively becoming great, growing more and more important or great. Yes,
so they're using growing like a becoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way they're using it. It's really kind of going. David was going, but we don't usually use going that way. So maybe becoming more and more great. Growing is okay to give the idiomatic idea, but obviously there's no verb there that relates to the verb grow. So that's why it might be a little bit weaker. Okay, now in transforming a participial clause into a verbal one, the usual result is for past tense, participle is the first thing we had as far as verbs, and then we later learned that we can use a perfect form of the verb to get more precision and get more tense idea. So ha'ish holek, the man is going, if we want to make that a verbal sentence, we would have, in a converted narrative at least, we would have wa'yelech ha'ish, and the man went. Okay, so that's just showing you the relationship between participle and your normal verb structure. It's just review. Now what he's trying to do is use that as a stepping stone to come up with an understanding of some other types of uses of this idiom. The same transformation was applied to the idiom cited in C and D. And so, but when you do that, you usually, to keep this idiom sense, you have to add an infinitive absolute to it, too. Look what happens here in sentence E. Wayelek Hayam Haloch Wisaor. The sea grew more and more tempestuous. Okay, this is, if you look back at sea, you had Hayam Holek with the Soer, two participles. Now we're converting from participle to a normal verb form, perfect verb form, or in this case a converted imperfect, which is giving you perfect meaning, Wayelek. And to do that, they will, in order to continue the idiom, they'll go back to the infinitive absolutes again and the rest of it. So you start off with the verb form in one of the finite tenses, and then you go to infinitive absolutes and use halak in the infinitive absolute again. He'll make a comment on it. I guess I'll read the next example first. Wayelek Dawid Halom Wagadol. David grew more important. Here it says the verb halak is taken as the main verb and is repeated now as an infinitive absolute after the manner of B above to express the idea of continuity. But although E and F correspond to B in construction, their meaning can be gained only from the knowledge of the idiom in C and D. That C and D idiom, of course, was using participle with another participle. Well, I guess I'll just stop here and rather than try to explain this, it'll take a little while. So I think you've got enough information there where you can go ahead and start on those exercises, and we'll work on those next Tuesday.